What's up? Welcome to episode 355 of the PS4 Blackcast. I am JCM with us this week is Isley.
Yo.
And unfortunately, Messiah's out. She's got to do some budget stuff, so she will not be joining us, although she'd probably just be talking about Animal Crossing. But yeah, we have, well, we did have some big news this week. I feel like it's probably going to be a shorter podcast, just because, you know, unlike all those other podcasts I listen to where they don't really know what they're talking about as far as PS5 specs, it's kind of, I always kind of skip those sections. I'm like, I don't really want to hear you guys just speculate about it, because it's just them talking about either if they liked or didn't like the presentation. let's go ahead and jump into new releases. So this week we did see the demo for the Resident Evil 3 remake come out. I didn't play it. I'm just going to wait for the actual game. And then we also got solo mode added to Warzone. That's the Call of Duty Battle Royale that got added this week. And then I'm trying to think of what else came out. I feel like, I know there's a lot of sales, but I feel like hitting time for everybody being indoors. But I can't remember what other games. Well, besides,
there's too many freaking sales.
Yeah, too many sales. But it's not anything I'm really like looking forward to right now. Also, of course, Doom did come out this week. I was trying to think of anything else that came out this week, but I think Doom and Animal Crossing were the two biggest. Doom, of course, came out on Friday. I can talk about a little bit of that later. But jumping into the news, we did get a trailer and release date for the Control DLC called The Foundation. This is, of course, the first, I think this is the first bit of DLC that's going to come out. It's coming out on March 26th on all platforms. And then for some reason,
have they said what the DLC is about yet?
Quote, "The Foundation expansion will delve into the oldest house's history. Jesse's alerted by the board that a situation has arisen in the Foundation, the bedrock of the oldest house. A mysterious structure called the Monolith has been damaged, resulting in an astral plane leaking into the Foundation. If Jesse does not find a way to stop it, the entire oldest house, along with the Bureau, will be consumed by this invading dimension." So it looks like those, spoilers, but like those weird glowy eye otherworldly dimension monsters that you find sometimes. Like they're behind it, obviously, because they're like they're the enemy of the oldest house. But yeah,
because so Control, the ending of that was like, I won't spoil the ending, but the ending was interesting for leading into DLC. So I was curious which direction they would go with it.
Yeah,
that sounds pretty sweet though.
Yeah, and it comes pretty quick. For some reason, it says it's released on PS4 and PC in March 26th, but for Xbox One, it doesn't come out until June 25th. So I don't know what the reason behind the delay for Xbox is, if it's, I don't know what that's about, but who knows. But let's see,
you got also, corona?
No, I just gotta clear my throat. I drink Modelo. So Neo 2 also got an update. At 1.05 rebalances proficiency and nerfs damage. So if you're playing Neo 2 and you had some issues, there's a big old list of patch notes you can read to see all the changes, but I'm not playing Neo 2, so I can't speak to any of these bug fixes and balances. And then, yeah, of course, the biggest news this week was that, well, we had Microsoft on Monday show a bunch of stuff for Xbox Series X. It was a bunch of demos behind their quick load feature where they, the lower size the game is, like, less memory bandwidth it needs, so, like, using all these old Xbox One early titles, they could have like up to 5 games that they can bounce back and forth pretty quickly. It's an interesting feature. I probably would never use it.
It was a weird feature to market, because why? I guess just why?
Yeah, I've used this standby mode on PS4. Like, I'll in a game, I'll put it down. It's just because I want to go straight back into the game when I boot up my PlayStation the next night or something. But I hardly ever bounce back and forth, and the only games I do bounce back and forth is between the single-player game, like Doom, and Apex. And you can't put Apex in suspend mode, because it's just going to be in the main menu, because you're going to get disconnected from the server. So, for games as a service, or MMOs, not really practical. And I'm not one of those people that bounces between, you know, I want to play 5 games at one time. I don't really do
like that. The only thing I could think of is it's built for like gaming households where, yeah, exactly, like 2 people or something are playing different games at the same time and you just want to leave them both like accessible quickly. For me, where I live alone, it just, I don't play more than one game at a time. Like, I start a game and then I don't really move on until I finish that game. Sometimes I'll have something going on like beside occasionally, but I've never felt the need to like quickly switch to it. So it's an interesting feature. I just don't really get why it exists.
Yeah. Like I said, I definitely think it's just for those, you know, multiple kids on one console, each playing their own game, or, you know, spouses or whatever, if they're playing on one console and they don't have each have their own, stuff like that. But yeah, it's definitely an interesting feature. Who knows how much it'll be used. I mean, you think about like Xbox One X or Xbox One rather, where they had like the, you know, you can use the Kinect to do the voice commands. It's like, yeah, sure, some people did them, but large majority never used the Kinect voice commands. So it could be right. One of the things like, here's a cool feature because of our SSD, but it, you know, who knows how many people are actually going to use it.
Yeah, I just thought it was an interesting thing to market specifically, because it seemed cool, but also completely random and unnecessary. But again, sometimes those things surprise you and you're like, you know, you think it's going to be horrible, and then you find out that it's a great quality of life feature that you never imagined. So it could end up being like that.
Yeah. and they showed some other minor things. You got to see how the box is put together. Like Digital Foundry did two videos on it where they talk about the specs, and then they talk about the actual hardware and putting it together and seeing all that stuff. So you can, if you're interested in what they're doing, you can watch those videos. And then Sony announced that they were going to show their video on PlayStation 5, which was what they intended to do at GDC, which of course got canceled. And I feel like that's where the audio, because like the video has a ton of views on YouTube, but it's got a bunch of dislikes. And that's because I feel like these people who were watching it were expecting it to be like, oh, it's an E3 situation where there's going to be a bunch of games. It's like, even at the start of it, they said, like, this is what we're going to do at GDC. It's going to be a GDC in-depth tech talk. And now, granted, a lot of people do comment, well, devs know what an SSD is, so you don't have to explain an SSD and some of the other things, like push from calling and loading data. But it's like, it's fine to go ahead and break it down, because clearly that's more, it seems like it's also made more for, you know, people who are going to be watching that, because the GDC talks are always streamed. But yeah, they did like basically an hour of Mark Cerny talking in front of a MST3K animated Shadows, which I thought was really funny, just to make it look like it was a GDC talk. But yeah, go ahead.
Oh yeah, I was going to say, I loved it. I know people were expecting an E3 tech thing where they like reveal the PS5 and then they reveal like, and these are the five games that are first party that we, you know, kept from leaking that you never had any idea about that are exclusive. And then like, I think people were expecting that, but what we got, I loved it. I thought it was really interesting, and it kind of got me pretty hyped for the PS5 when before, like, I was going to buy it anyways, but, I was going to buy it more so just because I like gaming and it's part of my lifestyle, not because I was particularly excited. Mm-hmm. This made me excited. I loved reading about it and seeing what it was capable of doing. And then the Digital Foundry video that you talked about just made it seem even cooler.
Yeah, it's, I think one of the people, because they think about the PS4 reveal where like it was in February and they showed, you know, hey, here's a bunch of games. And then granted, they didn't show the console until E3, but they did come out swinging right away with games and maybe a little bit of tech talk. But then in June in E3, they actually like went more in depth into all that stuff. But so taking this route, which I, again, like you said, I really liked it as well. I loved hearing all the tech stuff, and especially talking about the customized SSD. It's like, yeah, I know the benefits of an SSD, but to know how they're designing it and the way the IO and everything, so there's no bottlenecks, it's like, I love hearing that kind of stuff. And yeah, definitely, if you have watched it but you didn't watch Digital Foundry's like 25-minute talk about it, definitely watch that, because they do talk about some great points and really kind of flesh some stuff out. I think my favorite thing too is also the audio tech that they're doing. I love that a lot, because I'm huge into audio, and I love my new headset I got, the SteelSeries, just because it's got a bigger audio range on it. But yeah, I'm huge in audio, and I love like the way binaural audio sounds. I mean, they've used that in like Digital Foundry talked about. They've used that in Hellblade, the kind of binaural audio recordings. Now, granted, they're going to have these presets, so they can't really map it to everybody's specific, you know, ear shape. And I know he did talk about, oh, maybe you could take a picture of your ears or send a video and we can map it. It's like, I think it's kind of like pie in the sky stuff. I don't think they're actually going to do that. I think they'll just continue to map out test groups and just pick more presets, which I feel like is fine. I can't imagine. I mean, if you have such a big pool and you pick like five across that spread, you're going to get ones that are like, once you get pretty close, I don't think the difference between getting the exact contours of your ears mapped versus a preset that's near it is going to be huge. No,
they'll probably do like small, medium, and large ears, and then they'll probably have like just one or two weird custom ones that are like kind of funky.
Yeah, because I mean, even binaural, it's not like the binaural recording mics that they have now are, it's just one ear shape. It's not like they're going around with 100 different ones. Whereas if Sony is, that kind of does add that customization to it. And I really hope people adopt that, because I'm huge in audio. It makes games so much better. And yeah, I can't wait to see that tech go on. But yeah, it, from a raw computational standpoint, it is like a 12.28 or 12.13 versus a 10.28 teraflops, which everyone does say doesn't matter now because the way each of them customize the hardware, like they have all the other stuff, the AMD Zen 2 stuff is the same. They run at different hertz. Xbox is like 3.8 and 3.6, and PS5 is 3.5 with variable rates on
it. So the best kind of comparison I saw was people comparing it to like Xbox versus the PS3, where the PS3 had a bit of a different, it had the cell processor, obviously, and everyone freaked out about that. But it was more, it was a unique system that people weren't used to. So at the start, people didn't really know what to do with it. And they didn't really know how to customize it. But then by the end of the life cycle, you were getting phenomenal things on the PS3. And I think it might be a little bit like that with the PS5, with the SSD and how they're able to kind of switch around. Like the talk on the SSD and the memory was just really interesting, of how the SSD can almost function like RAM. I think it's going to take some time to get used to.
Yeah, well, he said in that part of the presentation was talking about the onboarding of new consoles and how it kept going up, especially the PS3. But once they went to PS4, it was basically just a couple months. And right now, they figured that's what it's going to be for PS5, is another about 1-2 months of onboarding to get everybody used to it. Because, I mean, as long as you're sticking at the same architecture, it's just you're changing some the way the I/O and some of the components work. You figure, okay, you know, and like he even said, not everyone's going to, you know, utilize all these new functions and features, you know, in that first year of game design. But the one concern I am curious about is if on paper, which is what a lot of people are kind of saying, is that the PS5, if it's potentially better, not obviously not from a raw teraflop perspective, but because also the way Xbox splits their RAM, they have 10 gigs at a higher transfer rate. And they have 6 that are at a lower one, whereas PS4 or PS5 is just, it's all the same across the board. It's unified, and it's kind of right in the middle. So it'll be interesting to see. Plus, I forget how much of Xbox's is allocated to the UI and the system. I think it's 2 gigs, but it might be 3.
It was a decent chunk. I thought it was 3, but
yeah, but could be wrong. Yeah, it'll be one of those things, too, where it's like some people on Twitter, like programmers and stuff, were saying, like, where, yeah, all this stuff is great, but, you know, if this turns out to be better from a design standpoint for games, they're still going to have to design those games for Xbox, for third-party games specifically. So it might be only, again, just like with this gen, where it's the first-party games, and with PS3, that really show off the tech. So we might end up in one of those situations where they're not necessarily fully, third parties aren't fully utilizing it. So I'm curious to see what those varying degrees are, especially if people are still making games that work on Xbox One as well as Series X. So now it's like, okay, well, on the Xbox side, it's basically just sliders. Like, okay, it's 30 frames at 1080p on Xbox One, and it's 60 frames at 4K on Series X. It's like, okay, but what about other stuff? Like, is the LOD better? Is draw distance, you know, stuff like that? Like, obviously it should be the LOD because of the SSD, but I'm curious how much they would spend time tweaking on a PS5 version. But
yeah, I kind of suspect that at the start, for Series X and for PS5, the games are going to be almost identical. They'll design them probably utilizing slightly less power than they're capable of, specifically so that they can basically make sure that the games run the same and they don't have to worry about it, and get them out quicker. And then I imagine as they develop further, they're going to, like, developers will kind of realize how they can tap into the potential of both. Because the Xbox, the Series X one is essentially like, it's what we already have with PCs. It's taking like the, I don't want to say simplistic route because that makes it sound bad, but it's the tried and true route. So I think at the start of the console generation, the Series X is going to be a bit easier to develop for. So they're going to develop probably for the PS5. And then the Series X is not going to be able to take full advantage of stuff just because third-party games are going to develop to the, maybe, I don't know if they'd go for the easier or harder system, but I think they're going to be almost identical at the start of the generation, and then as the generation goes on, that's when you'll see all the differences in what each console's capable of.
Yeah, and I'm sure it'll probably be one of those cases where it's also not even, maybe not even them fine-tuning, it's just the console itself in the being hardware driven and system driven, just being like, okay, well, it's the same, but the way the system handles that information is could be where the differences come in. There was a bit of confusion initially where Cerny was talking about backwards compatibility with PS4 games, and he did mention about the top 100 PS4 games at one point, causing some confusion amongst people. But there was people thinking, oh, well, that means only the top 100 games are going to be backwards compatible. But then there was a statement released from Sony. It says, a quick update on backwards compatibility. With all the amazing games in PS4's catalog, we developed significant efforts to enable our fans to play their favorite games on PS5. We believe that the overwhelming majority of the 4,000-plus PS4 titles will be playable on PS5. We're expecting backwards-compatible titles will run at a boosted frequency on PS5 so that they can benefit from higher and more stable frame rates and potentially higher resolutions. We're currently evaluating games on a title-by-title basis to spot any issues that need adjustment from the original software developers. In his presentation, Mark Cerny provided a snapshot into the top 100 most played PS4 titles, demonstrating how well our backwards compatibility efforts are going. We've already tested hundreds of titles and are prepping to test thousands more as we move forward towards launch. We will provide updates on the backwards compatible along with the much more PS5 news in the months ahead. Stay tuned. So this sounds, it's a lot like it sounds like with the boost when the PS4 Pro came out, like people had to, devs had to actually create a pro patch to take use of it, but then they added that boost mode on PS4 you can turn on that would benefit some games, either be more stable frame rate, didn't do anything in relation to it, it's basically just the frame rate. But there were some games where it caused a problem, and I remember there's threads on
Bloodborne.
Bloodborne, that's the one I had a big issue on, where it just kept corrupting my save after I'd get past ROM. It's like, it would just over and over and over because I was playing boost mode and I had to turn it off. But yeah, there were a lot of games where it's like, issues in this game, and they put on there. So it could be one situation where it's like, hey, the system automatically has the boost mode, but we want to make sure we don't run into those issues again, so we're just going to have to put these games through their paces. But that's got to be tough, because that's almost like, you know, restarting a game, I would imagine, where it's like, must have a bunch of testers in there just playing all these PS4 games from start to finish on the PS5 to make sure, A, you know, in multiple sessions to make sure the save file doesn't get corrupted.
I imagine they start with, like, they probably do start with the most popular ones. So,
yeah, you definitely want to start with the most popular ones.
First party titles, third party titles that are, you know, multiplayer, subscription services, things like that. And when you do that, random number, napkin math, it's probably only a couple hundred titles that you'd have to test immediately. And then, like, the much smaller games that people play but you don't really know about, like, they might get tested eventually, but there's no way they're testing all 4,000 or whatever games. There's just no way to know.
There'd be no need to test some of the stuff. It's like maybe if you want to just put it in, or if you could have it like, I don't know, some debug mode where you can just auto run it and see if make sure it just goes all the way through. But who knows? But yeah, we'll see. I mean, there won't be much I'll want to backwards compatible, because unless they do a PS5 patch for certain games, like the games of service stuff, that's the only thing I'll be playing. And I expect those to be, you know, backwards compatible. Like, I'll be playing Apex. I might, like, boot up Frostpunk or something. But, yeah, it's like I usually won't be playing, unless there's, like, a game. Because, obviously, Last of Us multiplayer is not going to be out at launch of Last of Us 2, so it's not like I'll be playing that on the PS5.
Did they say if they're releasing multiplayer for Last of Us 2?
They did. They said.
I thought they weren't.
No, they clarified later because everybody's disappointed, and they said, you know, we're working on something. It's going to be separate. We really like what we've got going on. It was like a couple days later, after the event that they had in, you know, whatever that was back last year.
Yeah, somehow I totally missed that.
Yeah, it's going to be like a standalone multiplayer thing. Probably maybe like just be free download or something on PS5. Like, if it was a PS5 launch title, that'd be great. But especially since it's just multiplayer, but who knows. But yeah, like, if that came out on PS4, but right before PS5, then it'd be like, okay, well, hopefully that obviously works out. But
when the whole, like, PS4 no backwards compatibility thing came out, I always thought that I would want to go back to, like, PS3 games. But the reality is, there's so many freaking games out, I've never had the desire to go back to a PS3 game ever.
Yeah, the only PS3 game I did want to go back to, which I did go back to after PS4 had launched, was Blood Dragon, because I didn't finish it. And they're like, oh, the PS4 controller works on the PS3 with Blood Dragon. So, like, okay, good. I got used to the PS4 controller, so I didn't have to use the PS3 one. But yeah, aside from that, like, there wasn't much. Like, there was some, like, I would have liked to replay probably, like, Far Cry 3 at the time, but yeah, there was plenty, especially once Final Fantasy came out on PS4. It was like, all right, well, I'm good there, because that's got me covered while I wait for single-player games. 14, of course. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see. You know, I'm curious how they'll spread out the news over the next couple months, or if they'll do just, like, one big thing. It'll be interesting what they do, and to see the launch titles and all that stuff. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it. can't wait for the comparison videos from all the analysis videos from Digital Foundry. Those will be great. But yeah, it's exciting times. I'll be curious to see if, you know, supposedly, I don't know, supposedly it's in every province. You know, China hasn't had any more new cases of COVID-19. So I'm wondering if, I know a lot of their factories are back up and running. I don't know if that means if all the electronics ones are, but like the ones that manufacture the product that our company sells, they're up and running. Just delayed, of course. But yeah, I'll be curious to see, you know, where all the components, are all the components made? And are there, like, is it like one, are we going to have another PS3 Blu-ray diode situation where it's like, everything would be good, but there's one that's manufactured in the Philippines or something, or like one in South Korea or something like that. And it's like, we can't get that one component. But yeah, because who knows? We'll see. And because there was a thing that came out where it's like someone saw Microsoft saying they were going to release on Thanksgiving this year, but then they came out and said that was a mistake. Don't know who put that up. So who knows?
I would bet that I don't think there's going to be that many production problems because of all this stuff. I think there might be a few, but I don't think it's going to be as big as people expect.
Yeah, especially since, I mean, yeah, I don't know. I can't imagine it would be that many. But yeah, I mean, it kind of depends on how all this COVID-19 stuff shakes out, I guess. And I feel like if it comes back, you know, if China sees no new cases and they're like, oh, we're good, but then it comes back, you know, or people can get reinfected or something, like, who knows. But we'll see.
You know, no point worrying about it.
Yep, just gotta hunker down and see how it goes. But yeah, so moving on from that, again, go ahead and watch the presentation from Cerny and then watch Digital Foundry's analysis video. Definitely don't just listen to people saying if they, you know, oh, I didn't like it, I did like it, but not actually talking about the spec stuff or not knowing anything about the spec stuff. It's
I still think it's silly that people didn't like it because obviously they're going to launch with some first-party game. Like, I don't know why that was ever really in question. I just didn't get... Maybe it's differences of interest, but when a new console is coming out, I want to know more about the console and what it's capable of and what they're shooting for and what their goals are. Like, for example, their goal being, what was it, a half-second load time for everything?
Something like that.
Their goal was basically like instantaneous load, which is like fascinating to me.
Yeah.
In purchasing a new console, that's what I want to know about is like, what are they shooting for? What are the load times? What are like the storage size? What creative things did you do that make this not just a PC? Is it going to have replaceable components? All of that stuff. And the Cerny video pretty much answered all of that.
Yeah. That I do like how they will allow third-party hard drives added in versus their proprietary, you know, card version that Microsoft is doing. But there won't be any.
I definitely don't like the proprietary cards.
Yeah, I could see it. I do like the idea, though, that it's at least it makes it simple. As long as it depends on pricing. But I do like the simplicity of it. Just be like, look, this is what you can do. It's here. I mean, because they've done that with the 360, obviously, their own custom hard drive on there.
Which people hated.
Sure, but I feel like the people that hate are probably like the more people that are in the know versus like people are just like, how do I expand? They don't have to worry about, do I get a Seagate? Do I get a, you know, this one? Do I get a, what kind of hard drive do I get? What's good? What's bad? Because, like, even with the situation here, with like Cerny said, he's like, yeah, you can upgrade with, you know, or you can expand with third-party NVMe SSDs, but they have to be of a certain spec. So don't go out buying them now, obviously. And they expect at the end of the year there'll be ones that are, you know, faster than what's in the PS5 currently, since it's the best in the market. So yeah, it could be like if there's some official list you got to wait for from Sony, be like, oh, these cards are good enough.
Well, yeah. They did speculate. Did Sony say, or was it just speculation that Sony would be pre-approving certain hard drives as like, this is a good one to try and make it easy on the consumer to essentially say like, if you want to upgrade, this is a good one to purchase for upgrading.
Cerny did say that there would be some sort of validation to make sure that what is on the market is good enough to be in the console to handle the needs of the system. yeah, because everybody kind of based, he thinks that a 7 gigabit transfer rate SSDs will be available by the end of the year, perhaps. But yeah, they did say there will be some validation because they'll have to make sure too that A, they'll want to test it to make sure that the system can create the virtual, oh God, I'm totally blanking on the terms that there were. But like the 6 stacks within the PS5 SSD, the NVMe drives only have 2. So they have to, the system on the back end has to create those extra 4 by using that additional, you know, expanded speed that the new drives will have to make it be able to do that. So we'll see. But yeah, they'll definitely probably release like a, hey, these ones, we tested them, they're good. You know, go ahead and use these. I mean, I probably won't upgrade right away. That you can use an external for your base PS4 games since those don't need to be on the SSD, obviously. The system can still run them off an external hard drive. But yeah, we'll see. They're probably pretty expensive too to get these expanded slots, but...
Well, that was the thing they made pretty clear in the Digital Foundry video is that, like, all this is great, but it will probably be expensive.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see. Maybe they'll make their own, it'd be nice if they made their own,
like a PS5 like not official third branded. Party, but a officially branded upgrade. That'd be pretty cool.
That'd be nice. I mean, that's what Microsoft's doing is they're working with Seagate or whoever to make those custom ones. So obviously, you have to work with someone. So that'd be nice if they, whoever they're working with to make their hard drives, are like, hey, let's make expandable ones.
It would give you the best of both worlds then of you have officially branded ones that you know work and you have third party ones that you can go to if you want cheaper. I will say the interesting thing about Microsoft's approach is it's you can keep the system running while you unplug the SSD stuff and just like plug and play, which almost makes it more like memory cards from like PS2 and stuff.
Yeah.
So that was kind of fascinating. And that was another one of those features where I'm like, maybe I would like that. I upgraded my PS4 hard drive, so I've never had to worry about storage and like delete games or anything to make room. But I know a lot of people that have. I feel like you have occasionally.
Yeah, I probably buy way more games.
Right. So for people like that, it seems like a great feature on the Xbox. I imagine the PS5 is going to be more, you stick it in and it's like the PS4 where it's like screwed in and it's an actual like computer system where you don't really replace it.
Right. Yeah. But yeah, we'll see how it goes later this year once we get closer to launch. But yeah, moving on, I guess we can just get into what we've been playing. What have you been playing?
Nothing new yet. I've officially entered the black hole void after completing the game. So I finished up all the trophies in Outer Worlds. I saved just the negative reputation trophy of killing everyone for last. And I'm officially like writing it off and done with it until DLC comes out. So I'm kind of in that void of trying to figure out what game I'm in the mood for next. Doom's not really my thing because it's, frankly, I get motion sick on those types of games. I love them. But also I suck at Twitch shooters. I'm good at like tactical shooters, but Twitch shooters, no. No chance, no. So,
you know, I wouldn't really call, because of the movement, I wouldn't necessarily consider it a Twitch shooter because you can do a lot by just strafing. And not necessarily changing the plane in which you're aiming.
It's definitely a pretty fast-paced shooter, though.
But it's more the movement where you're moving fast. And because of that, it's kind of like, you know, when people realized to strafe in GoldenEye and how that was a much better way to move. So you're strafing a lot and doing that. So there's not too much, like, it's not, you know, you're not Shroud playing Call of Duty or Overwatch or these, like, FPS games that require more of that. It's like you're just constantly moving because you have to in Doom, but the Twitch, you don't necessarily have to Twitch to shoot. You can just still take it casually. You're just moving a lot,
right? No, I think it's a brilliant game. It's just one of those. I've never been huge into FPSs. It takes a really unique FPS for me to love. I did like Wolfenstein a lot. But also kind of like, I suck at FPSs. So, knowing that, like, I'm watching streamers play like the Nightmare difficulty and seeing how much they're struggling with it, I know that that's something I would want to do, that I probably wouldn't be able to, that it would just cause me frustrations. So it's just one of those games that I personally enjoy watching more than playing.
Yeah, it's a... I haven't played a ton of it yet. I've only played a little bit. I played a little on Thursday night, and I played a little bit last night. I'm not liking the changes too much right now. They really change a lot where, like, you don't have nearly as much ammo. There's way more emphasis on using the chainsaw. There's a lot more. You get the chainsaw right at the beginning, and there's way more fuel tanks for it around the map. And like it, they really added that to the play style of the game. It's like you need to use the chainsaw because using that gives you ammo. And it's like, aside from some of the random ammo drops on the map, like, they really want you to use that, like, as part of the flow of the game. And getting used to that is just like, because I'd rather just shoot. Like, I don't always want to use the chainsaw, especially because I don't know when is there going to be another, you know, fuel canister for it. Or the worst is when I use it and I turn a corner and realize, oh, well, there's a bunch of ammo right here, so I didn't need to use it. It's like, ah, oh, that's great. But then, like, I find, like, a...
Yeah, you have seen a lot of people running out of ammo in the game, which seems counterintuitive to Doom, because when I think of Doom, I don't really think of running out of ammo. I think of, you know, run and gun and shoot and have plenty of ammo and just explode everything.
Yeah, and it kind of annoys you too, because the low ammo notification, for especially for the shotgun, shows up at like 50% ammo left, and I don't like that. It's like, show me at like 25% or something like that. Like, make it a little lower, because when you say low ammo, I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm running out. It's like, no, I still have like 8 shots. Like, that's out of the 16. It's like, come on. Yeah, I mean, it's fine, because it definitely just changes that cycle a bit from Doom 2016. I just got to get used to that and throw it in there some more. But yeah, still like the flow of the way it moves and just the fighting, the combat. Definitely seems a little tougher than it was in 2016. I played that one on hard, and I'm playing this one on hard. They're definitely way more aggressive. I'm also curious, I'm going to say, how the Doom Slayer escaped confinement from Samuel Hayden at the end of 2016. Because I'm like,
did they not explain that?
Not at the start of the game. It's just like, bam, you're going. And I'm like, how did he get out? How did he escape? Like, I'm hoping that it gets explained at some point, because I'm like, Samuel Hayden had the sword, the energy sword, essentially, with all the power in it, because it was energized by the, I forget what they called it, Archon energy or something like that, or I forget what it was. But he had it, and you get locked up. And I'm like, okay, well, how did we get out of there? And, how, you know, what happened to him? Like, the AI from the first one's still there, Vega. So I'm like, I'm curious if they're going to explain at all what happened there. But
seems like it'd be a pretty big tease if they just don't explain anything of how you escaped.
Yeah. Not that it necessarily, I guess, needs it, but, like, I want it, especially if you're going to have a story. But, yeah, I'm looking forward to, like, playing through it and getting all the story stuff and all the lore. I like reading those in the Doom games. But, yeah, and then aside from that, I've been playing some some Warzone, trying that out. It's a good battle royale. Definitely something fun to feed in there. Like, if you're playing a lot of Fortnite or Apex or something, and you just want something that's different for a bit, you play that. It's decent. I like the Gulag system. I don't like the respawn system because you can just infinitely respawn at the same pay stations, which I feel like there should be a limit. Yeah, it's pretty fun. Like I said, because they had solos going in there. I haven't won a game yet, but I don't play too much squads now. I play a little bit and we'll get pretty far. I've gotten pretty far on solos as well. But yeah, it's good. I still prefer Apex. Apex is just way better movement, and just I feel like I just like the gun combat in Apex, and the movement traversal is just so much better. Anyway, they're two different battle royales. They both have, you know, their advantages and disadvantages, I guess. I just prefer Apex more. But, yeah, I'll probably keep playing it some more and just hopefully get a win in it. Just check it off that list. But, and aside from that, not much else. Like, I still have to play. Just going to play some more Doom this weekend.
How far are you in Doom?
Not that far at all. Like, I basically just did the first... I guess it can be considered level, because it has 4 segments that you can fast travel back through and look for secrets. but yeah, I basically just did like the first level, which is like 4 sections. not that far at all. But yeah, but again, it's fun. I'll look forward to playing more, but I'm curious to see how it'll change once I get more of the abilities. You're not getting guns quite as quick as I thought you would, and you start with a shotgun versus starting with the pistol. And then you get you do get some upgrades pretty fast, I feel like. And it doesn't seem like there's too much stuff off the beaten path secret-wise, especially because it shows up on the map. You can kind of see them, and you can... The way they do it, too, is, like, instead of being an item you actually find, it's just a question mark, and you run into it, and it's like, oh, here's the secret. You got a cheat code for infinite lives. but that's nothing, too. They have these extra lives hidden around the map that you can grab, which are really weird. So, like, then you die, you just come back, and I'm like, it's such an odd mechanic. But yeah, I'll be curious to see how it goes. I mean, it's been reviewing really well. It's, you know, supposed to be better than 2016, and I really like 2016, so. But, yeah, maybe I'll have it finished by next podcast. Who knows? But, all right, well, that'll probably wrap it up for this episode then. So thank you all for tuning in and listening. Thank you, Izzy, for joining.
Yep.
And we will see you all next time.
Later.